I'm Fathery.
This is Dave.
And this is Text Trek.
Engage.
So welcome to the 33rd podcast of Text Trek, where we will be talking about the Star Trek Discovery episode, Vaulting Ambitions.
Yes.
Is it ambition or ambitions? Is it plural?
I believe it's ambition singular.
Okay.
Yeah, because in the play, Macbeth is speaking of his own vaulting ambition as all that's motivating him.
Yeah. So another Shakespeare-inspired Star Trek episode title.
Yep. Queuing up the next episode one, which we'll get to later.
Yes. So just a quick recap of this episode. We begin where we left off last week, and that is with Emperor Georgiou, the ruler of the Terran Empire, showing up, and the Burnham and Lorca from the Prime Universe that have been undercover on the Shenzhou must go over to face the Emperor.
Yeah. This like feels like the worst of all possible ideas. Like, they're driving, you know, it's like, I mean, it's not unusual in science fiction. It's like the Millennium Falcon flying into the jaws of the Death Star. It's, but kind of worse because I feel like we know that Georgiou is, like, particularly perceptive. Or, like, we've already seen that in the previous episode, and we'll see more of it this one.
Yeah, and also in the novel Desperate Hours, we know that she's a very smart and capable
right.
Person that you don't want to be faced off up against.
Yeah. Pike particularly, as a character that, you know, Trek fans know is kind of a badass, something of a stand-in for Kirk, and he gives her huge respect in the thing.
Yeah.
He's kind of like, I'm going to step aside for the senior officer here.
Yeah, they have to go toe-to-toe with each other.
Yeah.
And the mirror version of her seems perhaps more of a threat because of her devious nature and
right.
the amount of authority that she commands as the,
right.
as the Emperor.
Right, she has a starship that seems to be powered by a fucking sun or something like that. Did they say what it was?
No, but I'm
Charon?
Curious. Yeah, it's the ISS Charon, but I'm curious to know like what the power source on there. If it, is it like a Romulan ship where it runs off of a singularity or something like that?
Yeah. But it's certainly one of the largest ships we've seen in Star Trek. It feels a little bit more Star Wars in that sense, or Borg or something like that.
Yeah, just because it is. Because Star Trek ships comparatively are much smaller.
Right, right.
You know,
they're all sort of destroyer size.
Yeah, the huge Star Trek ships still tend to only be about like a kilometer long.
Right, you don't usually see giant like bases that are kind of also sort of ships too and stuff.
Like some of the Imperial ships in the Star Wars movies are just like gigantic.
Yeah,
like miles long.
Yeah. Sometimes almost goofily so, where they're just like making these things bigger and bigger to blow up bigger and bigger things.
But we do have the Imperial Palace and the A story going on there, and then we also have the USS Discovery, where I guess the B story would be Paul Stamets stuck in the mycelium network. He's physically on the Discovery, but he's mentally in this mushroom realm.
In a sort of time-honored trope, he's in a dreamscape that patterns itself to the familiar with him, so he gets to walk around within the Discovery,
the sets that they actually have in Toronto that are
right,
easy to like shoot on.
Which is sort of his mindscape slash the mycelium, what do they call it?
The mycelium network.
Mycelium network, yeah.
Well, there's also a Star Trek trope, is that you go to a weird place, but it looks just like your ship, because that is the set that they shoot the show on.
Right. Arguably, it actually makes sense. Although, like, walking around in metaphor, like, I'm going to go to the bridge, you know, which is my head, and that's where I will come to terms with myself. That kind of stuff is all right. That's a little silly. But arguably, I can see why your mind would, in fact, want familiar places in an extremely alien environment.
And we get to see Mirror Universe Stamets, who's stuck here with him.
Broadly, initially seems very much like him.
Yeah, but
we learn a little more something later.
Yeah, he does seem to be more of, like, he's more about, like, servicing himself. you know, trying to, like, worried about, like, his own survival.
Yeah.
He is doing mycelium experiments.
By the way, their first meeting, I have to mention, was very entertaining, where he tries to con real Stamets into thinking he's in the afterlife. Yeah. And Stamets is like, is this like some kind of narcissistic Virgil thing?
Yeah.
So he's why can't I suddenly say the name of that?
Dante's
Inferno. Yeah. And they kind of have a laugh together,
Q did the same thing to Picard.
Did he?
Yeah, in a Tapestry, uh-huh. where Picard thinks he's dying. And he sees the light and he sees Q.
Right.
He's like, I'm God.
Right, right. Well, with Q, it's the most palpable bullshit you've ever heard.
And Picard even responds with, like, the universe is not so poorly designed.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Sick burn, Picard.
Stamets is trying to find his way out of the mycelium network and get back into reality. Mm-hmm. Tilly and Saru are, like, monitoring his physical body on discoveries in the reaction cube and the engineering test bay. And, you know, they're seeing that there's weird stuff going on with his brain, and hopefully, like, he's stabilizing and is going to come to whatever's going on in there. And he comes face-to-face with a memory of Dr. Hugh Colbert, partner.
Yeah, they never actually, I guess, fully explained what it was, although I never had any difficulty with the concept that it was like his memory of him informing him what had happened.
Yeah. Which he kind of...
which was, is to say, his death.
Yeah, which he probably was aware of subconsciously, because we do see him when he's out of his cradling the body last week, so... I think this was his subconsciousness telling his consciousness.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, as far as I know, what's his name? Didn't I'm sorry. Say the doctor's name again.
Hugh Colbert.
Colbert. He did not actually say anything about the specific nature of his death, did he? Or did he? I mean, did he tell him who killed him?
No.
Okay. So yeah, like it feels like it's based on what he subconsciously took in.
Yeah. So we have to see.
But it's right. There was a very sweet. There's some very nice scenes together.
Yeah, and we see like Stamets like process that, and. Finally get out of the mycelium network and wake up, and as he does that, he also gets the Mirror Universe Stamets back into his physical body on the palace ship.
Yep.
And Stamets learns that his mushroom forest has been destroyed, that there's something malicious in the mycelium network that's like this wave of decay that has ruined his mushrooms, so that's going to make it more difficult for them to get their spore drive working. And also to get back into the proper universe where they belong.
Yeah. I was just thinking, later on, Georgiou questions Burnham about the mycelium network and the spore drive and all that.
Well, we'll get to that.
But I bring it up because Stamets of Mirror Universe was working on that. Did she not know about it?
Well, he's working on her ship, so I think she did know about it, but I think he probably hadn't developed as much. He's gotten as far...
It wasn't as pressing...
Well, I don't think he had, like, accomplished as much as the real Stamets. Because they didn't have the Mirror Universe Discovery, sounds like, doesn't have a spore drive.
Right,
because they're working on it in his laboratory on the palace.
Right.
But, you know, speaking of the palace, we do see Michael Burnham come face-to-face with Emperor Georgiou. And she's given this introduction, which was very Game of Thrones-ish, where she has, like, 1,000 titles. Like Daenerys Targaryen, where it was the... you know, Emperor Philippa Augustus Napoleus Georgiou, the Dominus of Kronos, the...
Tiberius.
Yeah, the Regina of Andor, mother of the Fatherland. And even, like, I thought her throne even kind of looked like the Iron Throne, just like the general shape of it. But, so she now has her Lorca prisoner that Burnham is presenting to her. And then they have, like, this really fucked up thing where she asks Burnham to pick a Kelpian.
Yeah.
And she doesn't know why, and she's the Emperor Georgiou.
My assumption, servant, was incorrect.
Yeah, so we find out that they actually have dinner on board the palace ship, and Burnham finds out that she's eating the Kelpian that she selected earlier.
Yeah, it's super fucked up.
And we even have Michelle Yeoh holding one of the threat gangulas and chopsticks.
Yeah, what would have been an adorable scene of her feeding her surrogate daughter some delightful sushi turned out to be a dead Kelpian's ganglia.
But we get some backstory on...
It's a fucked up show, people.
It is. It does the darkest thing a lot. It'll make, like, whatever is, like, the darkest, most brutal choice.
Yes.
That's what they go with. It almost feels like Frank Miller is giving them notes in some of these episodes.
Or, I mean, and, you know, I'd like, I hate to keep coming back to it, but they acknowledge the influence early on, but Game of Thrones is in there. And they're like, well, what if instead of having the Agonizer booth show up once or twice, it showed up about every 15 minutes for the entire season?
But in this dinner scene, we do get some backstory on the Mirror Universe version of Burnham. We learn that she was raised by the Emperor instead of being raised by Sarek. We learn that she was actually part of Lorca's rebellion against the Emperor.
Yeah.
That she had ran off with him.
Yeah, that's an awkward... When you realize that your big bluff was based on something that's kind of historically known to be bullshit. Oops. They did their best with what they had.
What do you mean?
She did not know that she had been part of Lorca's rebellion, right? That her mirror self had been? Am I right?
No, it sounded like the Emperor knew that, you and Lorca were conspiring against me.
Right.
And that's why you were... Because everyone in the Mirror Universe thought the two of them were killed.
Right. No, what I'm saying is, like, maybe I have a point of confusion here. Emperor Georgiou seemed to indicate that... So she said that Burnham had been a co-conspirator.
Yes.
But they, in the various records that they had dredged up from that, in that first episode, from where they got all their Mirror Universe knowledge...
From the
did
Klingon
she know
ship.
That?
Did Burnham know? No, Burnham thought, from like the report that like the Klingon, Vulcan, and Dorian ship had...
Yeah, she just thought that she had been hunting
down
Lorca.
Yeah, Michael Burnham was off chasing Lorca, and they were both believed to be dead.
Yeah. I'm just saying it's spectacularly unfortunate for her that she made up a passably decent story where, like, oh, I caught the real killer, and I'm bringing him in for you, and Georgiou's probably thinking the whole time, like, I know you were with him. Right?
Yeah, but that sounds like that wasn't common knowledge. That might have been something that she learned about, like, after they disappeared.
Right, right.
She probably had, like, spies that got that information to her or something. But yeah, so Burnham's in deep shit, because now she's going to be executed.
Right.
And I was kind of surprised that she came forward with the whole truth at this point.
That was actually the most startling moment in the whole episode for me. But, I mean, she was literally moments from execution.
Yeah. So it's realistic. Like, I mean, that's what you would do. Like, you have no other card to play at that point. So.
Right, right. Unless you want all your friends and ship's allies and stuff to die, the one bit of leverage she has is weirdly the truth.
You know, so she explains, I'm not the Michael Burnham you know, I'm from the other universe. And Georgiou knows about the other universe because she has the Defiant crossed over in the Tholian web.
Yep. Which, I guess, weirdly, on this show itself, they haven't explained much about that. They just said it happened, and I guess viewers who might not have seen those episodes or seen the Enterprise episodes that dealt with it as well would just be taking it for granted that, yeah, sure, I'm sure some Prime Universe ship has crossed over at some point.
Or they're either that or they're confusing it with the Defiant on Deep Space Nine, knowing that Deep Space Nine had a lot of Mirror Universe episodes.
Right, well, I had forgotten that there was a pre-existing Defiant until you reminded me. So.
Yeah, the 1764.
Yeah. Which kicked much ass in the Enterprise episode where they steal it, so.
And I like that Georgiou referenced some of the continuity from that episode, where she says, you know, your people are dangerous, that's why we keep this information restricted. You know, we don't want you to inspire another rebellion.
Yeah.
You know, referencing what the Mirror Universe T'Pol and Saval and Phlox were doing, if you go and watch those Enterprise episodes.
Yeah, but doing
Mirror
it in
Darkling.
Such a way where they're not, like, doing, they're not, being so specific that you feel like, I clearly missed something. They did it in a smart kind of generic way.
Yeah, but I should back up a little bit. When we get that reveal from her that she says, you know, I'm from the other universe. Here's this Starfleet badge. You can check the quantum variants on it. Mm-hmm. See, I'm telling you the truth. And then Michelle Yeoh immediately, she's in this room full of, I guess they have lords now.
Oh shit, yeah.
They have lords in the
Mirror
Universe.
Yeah, they're like their feudal lords.
So, more Game of Thrones influence.
Yeah.
But what they don't have in Game of Thrones is a fidget spinner that kills everyone in the room like Wesley Snipes did at the beginning of Blade.
Yes.
When he threw like the boomerang of death and spun around and killed everyone.
Yeah, this thing just went through everybody's head.
Except she spared one lord.
Yeah.
And asked him, can you keep a secret?
Yeah.
Now clean all this shit up and you can be governor of Andor.
Yeah.
So I loved everything about that scene. And I love that they said Andor, like they did in the old Trek shows, and not Andoria like they do on Enterprise.
Yeah, it's a small but nice thing. I kind of like it.
I have just always kind of assumed that the words are interchangeable, that either one is correct. I think in actually, like, the Star Trek Star Chart book, I think they're actually like two different planets in the same system.
Oh, interesting.
But yeah, it's, I like. I think Andor sounds cooler than Andoria.
Yeah, I agree.
But so we get to see how badass Emperor Georgiou can be, and then that's when her and Burnham start.
Although,
making
like, I have to say, like, if in the real world, if these people have prominently risen up to those ranks, you're gonna cause like even as a like an all powerful emperor, you're gonna make some waves if like half of your major like. Feudal lords die, or like a big chunk of
them. But you're going to make a lot of people happy, because how the mirror universe works is whenever someone above you dies, you move up.
Yeah, so, I guess so.
Like, I guess, like, all these people, like, their sons or daughters are going to, like, take over, the, like, right. the lordship.
Yeah, I suppose there's always that. You can always feed them some red meat.
Yeah. But I think it's interesting the bargain that they strike, Burnham and Georgiou. Burnham says, I'll show you the spore drive. If you will help me get the information on the Defiant and get home. I just want to leave. We'll leave your fascist universe alone. Just let me get back.
She doesn't throw that out immediately. Georgiou, like, pumps her and says, like, you got to give me something that... otherwise, there's no way I have any cause to help you.
Yeah.
She alights on that. I can't believe she would ever actually do it. It's way too much power to give somebody so dangerous.
I know. And so I'm thinking they're both planning... on betraying the other one.
Yeah.
Because you know how treacherous mirror universe people are.
She based her initial bid to win Georgiou over on an emotional thing. Like, you're like a mother to me here. You were my, you know, like, superior officer and, you know, like...
surrogate mother. Like, surrogate mother before. They didn't use the term, but...
And she clearly indicates we're connected between universe, which is an interesting counterpoint to her saying that she didn't buy into the destiny bullshit Lorca was spinning in the previous episode or two. Which, of course, that'll come back, too.
Because she's lying. She's trying to do whatever she can to get a way to escape Georgiou, telling her whatever she needs to tell her.
Yep.
Because I don't think there's any way she's going to give her the spore drive.
Right.
So they're both planning on betraying
each
other.
And one can only assume that Georgiou is smart enough to know that, and they're probably both trying to figure out when they're going to make their particular move to make sure they get what they want out of this.
Yeah. It's like a... you know, like a chess game where they're both trying to plan several moves ahead of each other.
Right. And yet there is probably some real emotional connection under there. Like, you know, as awful as this Georgiou seems, I suspect Burnham doesn't want to just kill her.
And I think Sonequa Martin-Green plays this really well in, like, a lot of her acting, like, just, like, her emotion that she gives off. Because, yeah, imagine seeing, like, someone who, like, you dearly love who has died. Like, we've pretty much all experienced that.
Yeah.
And you come face-to-face with them again, and they're, like, this evil asshole.
Right.
Like, that would be super traumatic.
Right, but you're still seeing them sound exactly alike, talk similarly, probably, to how they did before. So, yeah.
So this is my dog on the YouTube channel. If you're watching, this is Philippa Georgiou is what I named this dog. Now I have to extend her name to include all of those titles.
Look up here. But, yeah, that's right. Let him see your awesome little hideous face. It's a little goblin.
On YouTube, like and subscribe if you think that this dog is cute.
Otherwise, he's going to have her put to sleep.
Yeah, or leave a comment if you think the dog is ugly and stupid looking. And if you're listening to the audio-only podcast, check us out on YouTube.
But this is some Dark Mirror Universe shit.
That's Star Trek Discovery for you. Yeah. So, well, all that is going on, they're also piecing together things about Lorca.
Yes. Who, and by the way, we have skipped over the Ash subplot, too.
Yeah, well, you want to talk about Ash first or Lorca? Let's end on Lorca.
Yeah, Lorca's like the big, episode. Lorca's a big one.
Okay, so with Ash, what I guess would be like the C story, we see Saru actually doing some cool first officer stuff or some cool commanding officer
stuff. He takes some initiative that he does not normally do.
So Ash Tyler is being torn between the two personalities, Bok and Ash.
He's like on this constant adrenaline rush and like they can't keep him down in the med bay and... And they know that something... They know a little bit from Burnham that supposedly he thinks he's a Klingon or something like that. But they don't know the biological nature of it. They just know that they can't tranquilize this guy and he's dangerous.
And Saru goes and confronts Laurel.
Mm-hmm.
Who, you know, we assumed last week that she would come into play in this episode because of Ash being back on the ship. And Saru, you know, asks her to explain what the hell is going on with them. So she confirms what I had been suspecting for a while, what I think most of us had figured out, that he was a real human captured at the Battle of the Binary Stars. They took that guy's memory, they took his DNA. I guess he's dead now.
Yeah.
And then they converted Vok to be human in appearance. Right. And I guess gave him, you know, altered his DNA to look like Ash Tyler's, and gave him all of Ash Tyler's memories.
Right.
And,
presumably at, like, some subservient level to Vok's when it was supposed to activate.
Yeah.
This is one of the problems I had with, the episode. I did not see why she would put all her cards on the table on this one and reveal, she just told him everything. And she was talking about him, like, in that very, like, he's going to change the face of this war. It was that sort of religious thing. But, like, you know, he was supposed to be a sleeper agent. And even if things went wrong...
Well, like, I think cover has been blown at this point.
I mean, so. I guess so. He's in the hospital and they're trying to tranquilize him constantly. I guess I don't know quite what she hoped to earn or to get from it.
Well, she said she wasn't going to cooperate and you know, help him with his condition. So Saru actually beams him into the cell with her, into the brig with her.
Yeah.
And when he
comes... That's a Kirk move.
Yeah.
That's like a crazy Kirk
move. Or I could see Janeway doing that.
Yeah.
But yeah, when
because
she comes...
Because he recognized that she had an emotional connection
yes.
to him.
Yeah, like the way she was talking about him with such reverence, I guess he suspected there is a
right.
romantic.
He's like, well, what if I just
there?
Beam his agonized, tortured body in there, and like, what is she gonna do? It could have gone bad. She could have just killed him or something.
Well,
but Saru, I guess, is like, man, we ain't got time to fuck around in the mirror universe. Let's just try some shit.
Or does she kill him? Because that's another thing I wasn't real clear about, was when she says...
Well, they take him to the med bay, or take her to the med bay and stuff.
Right, but when she says, you know, yeah, this can be reversed, but I have to do it. So they have her performing a procedure on his brain.
Yeah.
And my interpretation of that was that she, like, erased all of the Vok out of his brain, and that's why she gives the Klingon death howl. She basically, like, killed Vok out of Ash Tyler. So yeah. Then he wouldn't be in this dishonored state.
Right.
But then I'm thinking, like, well, what was the end game with Vok? Like, I know he was going to be, like, a sleeper agent on the ship.
Yeah, and presumably Ash would have assassinated Lorca and taken over the spore drive, or, you know, who knows what.
Yeah, but, I am kind of disappointed if this is all we see of Vok, if he's just going to turn into normal Ash Tyler at this point.
I'm disappointed in that feels like that plot was somewhat underthought from their perspective, from the writer's perspective. I'm not disappointed in the sense that Vok and the Klingon subplots are still kind of, I consider, one of the weaker spots on the show, and I like Ash more as a person than I care about Vok's subplot.
Yeah. I disagree. I like the Vok... Well, in theory, I like the Vok plot, but I want it to go somewhere.
Right.
I want it to do something with a payoff.
Right. I honestly think I wanted to see him, if not, like, steal the spore drive or sabotage it for that... I wanted to see him do something big. I like, you know, you like bad guys that are effective. Even if they're doing horrible things, it still, you know, really heightens the drama when you're like, oh my god, look what that guy just did. He just destroyed... Dog.
The dog's barking.
Hush! Very dramatic.
Philippa Giorgio, be silent.
That's gonna work as well as it did for Burnham, I'm sure. But you know, if he had destroyed, you know... Major Federation Starbase or something like that. Or, you know, there's all sorts of things he could have done on the path to doing this. Or there could have been some other interesting dramatic consequences.
Now, one possible thing they could do that might be neat, if it's something that they do in Season 2, if they
What if she just says, she's like, I've erased the Vok personality, it's all gone. And she's like... Because she knows she didn't.
Well... He's speaking...
If I were evil, I would do that.
Like, he's, like, speaking English at the end, and she seemed like... I mean, yeah, it could be some Klingon treachery, but...
Like, 3 seasons from now, he's gonna be Vok's back, baby!
Well, I was thinking one possible thing they could do is, what if he's normal Ash Tyler now, but in Season 2, they need someone to go infiltrate the Klingons?
Yeah.
And since he has... His body is actually, like, originally Klingon, and it would be easy to convert it back to Klingon, and yeah. So they send Ash Tyler... to infiltrate the Klingons as Vok.
As his medical officer treating his PTSD, I would like to recommend against doing that to him, But dramatically speaking, yes, I can see how that might be, that there might be something to be done with that.
But I will reserve judgment on the Ash Vok subplot until the end of the season, because
right.
there might be more to it.
We haven't quite been able to see it. We don't know exactly what just occurred.
Yeah. But if we don't get more of that, if this is supposed to be like a resolution to that, I will be disappointed.
Yeah.
So is that it for Ash Vok?
I think so.
So meanwhile, on the Imperial Palace ship, you have Lorca this entire time has been in an agony booth getting agonized. And the character Maddox, who I think we saw last week, is like in command of the Imperial flagship. But he's a captain in the Mirror Universe. And he wants some alone time to torture Lorca. Because
he's got a vendetta.
Yeah, Lorca and this guy's sister have some history. So you know how that goes.
As a real quick aside, one thing I liked in this episode, it goes back to the very beginning of the episode, Burnham gave him like an injection or whatever to Lorca to minimize the effects yeah. of the agonizer, which I was thinking like, yeah, those are apparently supposed to be like some prime torturing devices, horrible, horrible pain. It'd be hard to imagine for a person to like take it for days on end and not lose their sanity. So I sort of appreciated that they just took some steps to kind of minimize it for poor Lorca. And when I say poor Lorca, he might not be the best guy.
Well, we do see him watch what was going to be one of Mirror Universe Lorca's soldiers get killed in front of him. Because he wouldn't say the name of this guy's sister. And this right. guy's like super fixated on like, say her name!
Right, or this guy gets it, your old pal gets it. And he doesn't do it, and the guy gets it, and it reminds me of like the like a Klingon neutralizer in the Star Trek III. Like it looks like it rips you apart pretty bad.
So in the Harry Mudd with the time machine thing episode, magic to make the sanest man go mad, mm-hmm. when they have like that thing that you swallow, and it's supposed to be like the most painful death.
Yeah.
And we see Burnham like actually take it to yeah. force to Mudd to reset the time loop yeah. again. This is the effect that should have looked like. Because this looked extremely painful. Like, I believe this could be, like, the most painful way to die. You see, like, the guy, like, start to burn and yeah. from, like, the inside out and then explode.
Yep. Yeah, it looked pretty bad.
But Lorca is saying, you know, he's not going to say the sister's name. And my theory had been that Lorca had always been a Mirror Universe infiltrator. I talked about that last week, I believe.
Yep, I think that one was out there in fan circles too.
Yeah, I'm not the only one who's thought that, and I think there's been a lot of clues for that. But so at this point in the episode, I'm thinking, well, maybe he's not from the Mirror Universe. He doesn't seem to know what this guy is talking about. Like, he doesn't seem like to know what
the
this
longer
guy...
he held out, the more I was sure he was.
Yeah,
I was like, he's gonna name drop that shit in a minute.
Because then you have him. He like starts to collapse, like he's about to die, and Maddox panics. He's like, I can't have you die on me. You know, my ass is gonna be in trouble if you die on me. So he has the defibrillators.
Yeah, they're future defibrillators to keep him alive.
Yeah, and then Lorca, he was faking. He grabs the pads from him and then, like, fries his brain.
Yep, he reverses the hole.
And says, yeah, her name was Anna, and I liked her till someone better came along. Probably referring to Michael Burnham, who Philippa Georgiou fills us in that she was the mother to Burnham, and Lorca was kind of a father figure, and that evolved into some type of romantic relationship.
Right.
The two of them were conspiring against her in the Mirror Universe. And, we learned the light sensitivity thing. And that's how Burnham figures out that Lorca had always been from the Mirror Universe.
Right. It is not from some injury he received. It is a standard feature of Mirror Universe people.
Yeah, which doesn't exactly work in a few older episodes of Star Trek. We've seen people in the Mirror Universe in very brightly lit rooms.
Yeah.
Most notably would be Mirror Mirror, but also In a Mirror Darkly on Enterprise.
Imagine little lost scenes in all these scenes where they're like, can we dim the lights a little bit? and then they're like, well, why? And you're just like, I've just got a headache or something like that.
But we do see...
just assume it happened.
It actually makes sense for Deep Space Nine, because whenever they go to the Mirror Universe... it's Tarok Nor, because it's still controlled by Cardassians.
Uh-huh.
Because the Terrans have all been defeated by this point.
Right.
But whenever they go there, it is more darkly lit, so it kind of does make sense there. But
right. I mean, broadly, it fits kind of... For sure, it's like, I mean, arguably a heavy-handed thematic thing. It's literally darker there. They can't see the light. You know, it's... but I don't mind that. You know, when you think about it, like I was watching the episode thinking, it's not, this is kind of like trying to figure out Superman and Bizarro.
I was about to say that.
Isn't everything exactly perfectly opposite Superman? It seems like in a lot of ways, the mirror universe as we know it in Star Trek is the opposite of the Federation. Like, that's all the kind of key stuff. Not everything else gets reversed. Federation stuff tends to be where good becomes evil.
Well, this is what it reminded me of Superman.
Uh-huh.
Sorry if you don't like superheroes or comics. We gotta divert into this just real quickly.
You know what? They're watching Star Trek. They've got a foot in that.
But when Geoff Johns did the new incarnation of Earth 3, which is like the mirror universe of DC Comics, it's like the evil Earth where all the superheroes are villains. Yeah, there's instead of the Justice League of America, they're the Crime Syndicate of America.
Right.
And instead of Superman, it's Ultraman. And instead of kryptonite being his weakness, that's his power source.
Right.
And instead of like the sun being his power source, that's his weakness. So he has to like stay in darkness.
Yeah.
And I thought, like, that's kind of heavy-handed, that's not very practical, like, this villain has to stay in darkness at all times, and he accomplishes this by moving the moon to eclipse the sun, and I guess he, like, always moves the moon around to constantly block out the sun, but I thought that was a little silly there, and I feel like Star Trek Discovery doing a very similar thing, it seems a little silly here, but
I
can roll with it, but it's, I think they could have gone... I think there could have been a more clever clue that they set up and way back in episode 3 that they paid off now instead of this, these people are so dark, they can't even, like, face the light.
Right. Yeah, it it probably could have been a little bit more artfully done, but I still kind of like it in a way. I'm not against a little bit of heavy-handedness. Star Trek has been known to use heavy-handed metaphors before to get its points across, so... By the way, just as a real quick aside, I felt like there was a strong lack of Tilly in this episode, and it made me sad.
Yeah, this episode did not have much focus on Tilly. We just see her kind of, playing doctor with Stamets.
Yeah.
and then we see her when Stamets wakes up, and he's like, oh no, the mushrooms! And then, oh no, our entire shroom supply has been decayed.
This sounds like a very different kind of show. You know, it had to happen at some point. I was just sad. to miss my enough of... I didn't get enough quota for her.
You didn't like all the cool, badass Michelle Yeoh as the Emperor?
No, I didn't like her. She was palpably dangerous.
You know, when she whipped out her sword because she was about to execute Burnham, and it's a sword that actually Michelle Yeoh helped design.
Well, like, I'm just going
to
say...
We have to see her sword fight before the end of the season. I'm like, going to throw a chair if I don't see that.
I think you're right. You know, we saw her. Was she sword fighting like when she got killed?
Yeah, there's a little bit of like a martial arts type fight with her and Takuvma.
Yeah,
back at the Battle of the Binary Stars, but it was very brief.
But I'll say this: she conveyed palpable menace. I like when Star Trek characters do that. Sometimes hard to do that with villains. I'm just gonna like randomly grab at J.J. Abrams. Star Trek Into Darkness and say that Benedict Cumberbatch never did convey that. Good actor.
He was not
menacing.
I like Cumbercon.
Fucking menacing.
I like Cumbercon more than I like Nero. Or Krall, to be honest.
Or who?
Krall, the Star Trek Beyond villain.
He was a weak villain. That one I watched more for the good guys.
But speaking of the villain of Star Trek Beyond, I'll say this is actually a thing that I think Discovery has done better. I love the concept of the villain in Beyond, who is this guy who is like super anti-Federation. He's disgusted by the idea of other races coming and working together collaboratively. Mm-hmm. And I think Discovery has done a good job, a better job...
Dramatizing that
opponent to collaboration and diversity with, I would say both with the Klingons, even though I'm kind of dissatisfied with some of the Klingon stuff they've done, but I would say even both with the Klingons and then much more so with the Terran Empire and Discovery.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they took that idea and did a better job with it.
Do you think anybody in the Mirror Universe is happy?
That's a good question.
They do,
They're not. They're all scared. They're all terrified.
Yeah, but it's like the only way they know. Like it's almost like in their universe, it does work better to be paranoid, or at least that's just like the natural order of things, is to do that. I think they feel like they gain momentary security And that's the best life can do. They just don't, they're like, and probably like the depraved orgies and stuff like that. But always with the sense that somebody could slit their throat in any given instant.
The mirror universe is often more sexualized than the
it's true.
The normal Star Trek settings. But so one thing we got to bring up is the character Maddox, when he's torturing Lorca, he does mention, yeah, we captured all of your followers. We have all of them from all across the galaxy rounded up. We had to install agony booths all in the aft hangar bay to torture all of them. So now Lorca is on the loose, and he knows exactly where to go to get all of his soldiers or officers or whoever was loyal to him. So I think we're gonna see the Lorca versus the Emperor.
Yeah. Next week. I was trying to figure out, like, in such a dangerous situation as they are, if he was, when we were guessing last week that maybe he was, this was like all along Mirror Universe Lorca's plan was to get back, overthrow the Emperor and all that stuff. That a lot of things would have to go right, or he would just have to be treacherous as hell to get that close to the Emperor. And it seems like both those things happened. Things kind of went right in the right way. Like, he was not immediately executed. He, you know, and you could probably count on that. They really like torture there.
Yeah.
And
he also knew Burnham was going to keep him alive long enough until the Emperor would eventually show up.
Yeah. He probably figured there's a few different ways that he could bust out once he did, and you know he's always been good at playing people's emotions like he did. Mm-hmm. He did the who's the guy he gave the defibrillator to his face?
Oh, Maddox.
Maddox, yeah. And where do things end with Lorca? What was the last thing we saw?
The last thing we see is when he stomps in Maddox's face and kills him.
Yep. He gives him a curb stomp.
This episode had seemed kind of a more of a less interesting episode to me compared to the previous 2 weeks. This felt like a slower episode that had some big stuff, not like the real big gut punchy stuff. It felt more of like just the string connecting the dots from the last couple episodes to the upcoming episodes until we got to the end and then like the Lorca reveal. I really loved that payoff, even though I thought that might be where they were going. It explains so much of what has happened in the show previously. And I was so disappointed when it cut to black and then the end credits roll, because I totally didn't realize 45 minutes had passed and I wasn't ready for the episode to be over.
Did you watch the teaser?
No.
I didn't either.
But
I was sorely tempted to. I know my stupid Facebook feed is going to have little glimpses of it over the next week.
Yeah. I did watch After Trek and I did see the
their snippet
little
scene.
Little clip, which doesn't really spoil much. It's something that's kind of obvious, so I'm going to go ahead and tell you. Because normally how they do these...
Is it Burnham and Ash consummating their relationship once again?
But normally when they do these, it's something from super early in the episode.
Yeah.
It doesn't really give anything away. But we did see Landry, who was the security chief on the Discovery before she got killed by Ripper.
Uh-huh.
We see Mirror Universe Landry.
Oh, wow.
And she's one of Lorca's followers in that universe.
Huh.
So.
By the way, do we think this is the, when the actor plays the doctor, do we think this was the episode he was talking about when he said it was his favorite scene?
It could be. I mean, that was a pretty,
he got some pretty intense dramatic stuff. But they are not, I'm not seeing any obvious resurrection at this point. It could happen. There's definitely ways, alternate, mirror universe version of him. There's other things that could happen. But I do not see an obvious resurrection, do you?
Well, this is something that I'd never heard of before because I don't watch that many new TV shows. I literally watch like 5 shows.
Uh-huh.
But there's this term nowadays called bury your gay characters, which a lot of people are frustrated that gay characters always die on TV shows.
Right.
Which I didn't even know that was like a common thing. And right. I think there might have been some backlash on Discovery about that.
Mm-hmm. I think I've picked up on that. It's the writers on any given show. This has been for like at least in current society for decades has been an issue with almost any minority character. Is you want them to be fully fleshed out, but they also have to carry the burden of the weight of like whatever their minority is, and so they need to sometimes be better, and that sometimes runs the risk of them not being as interesting, and you can't hurt them because then because they stand in for everybody of their minority, then you're spitting in the face of that particular minority. So I do understand how writers can feel have difficulties with this, and, you know, it can, in a weird way, it could almost be a bold act to kill a minority character just because you are treating them just like any other character in a dangerous show.
Right. If you have, like, a realistic diverse cast, then you have to have bad things happen to everybody.
At the same time, these are the first fucking serious Star Trek gay relationship, and it is a shame on that level, too. So, I'm kind of torn. Anyway, so you were finding out about this.
But they were also, like, super quick after that episode aired, where we did see the neck breaking 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the showrunners are talking about, like, oh, no, this isn't the last we've seen of them. Like, they were trying to, like, get ahead of that backlash.
Right.
Which...
But we still don't know if they meant he's going to have more flashbacks, we're going to meet Mirror Universe him, or whether he's going to be fully resurrected like the Phoenix.
Yeah. And to be honest, I kind of don't want to see a full-on resurrection.
I want full-on resurrection.
Well,
if they can write, do it in a good way, and I have some faith in the writing team to be able to do it at this point, because, you know, I do feel like on, especially on, like, sort of science fiction and superhero shows and stuff like that, there's almost this fear of giving characters stability, and especially the stability of a relationship. They always feel that they have to sabotage it, throw in another person to break it up. And that sort of, that sense of, like, entropic breakdown is always, it's a little like Charlie Brown never kicking the fucking football. Like, sometimes I want the drama to be mined from other places than the relationship falling apart.
No, I definitely agree with that. And that's one of the weird things is that in Star Trek, most of the characters are never married or never getting, like, really long-term relationships. Right. It happens, like, I guess, like, each show probably has, like, one example of where it does happen.
Right.
But
you know,
with the exception of maybe
Much
Deep
more
Space
understandable
Nine, but...
in earlier days because of the nature of serial TV. They just, episodes did not link up in that sort of sense, and it does, you know, this is the argument that they made when Joe Quesada, through various weird means, undid the Peter Parker, Mary Jane marriage.
Yeah, which I'm still mad about, and I'm gonna take that to the grave.
Sure. But, admittedly, they did do what they said they were gonna do with it, which is, it provides him, he became a swinging single again. And every 6 or 8 months, he might be dating somebody else, and they could be a superhero. They could be a normal person he's got to protect and shield his identity from. Just all these different story options come up with instead of variations on things within a marriage.
Mm.
Now, actually, I always
wouldn't know because I stopped reading Spider-Man.
Well, Dan Slott did some good stuff in there, but I'm going to say this: like, I do feel like the writers are like scared of marriage, and could have mined some more interesting questions. Those years when Peter Parker was married, and honestly, when probably like when Superman was married in the 90s, they did some good stories.
Yeah. Well, let's like bring it back into Star Trek.
All right, let's do it.
It's something that I think like writers in both fields would kind of feel like, well, that ties your hands. You're not able to do as many stories because you can't
tell
have
that,
them.
Tell that to Bordas on the Orville, where they are successfully. Portraying a relationship with a child.
Well, I stopped watching that too. But
yeah, I know you don't like it, but I'm just saying, like, I don't think you could argue that that particular point is one of their weaknesses.
No, what I'm saying, like, it's something that writers are hesitant to do.
Right.
Although,
right. Well, you know
Deep,
what? I think you're
Deep
always
Space Nine had a couple of relationships on there, but
I think you're always going to be hesitant to find yourself. You're always going to want dynamic rather than static as like a philosophy, and that goes for anything. You know, change is the basic fuel of drama. So, you know, but I also feel like the times they are changing, you know. This is not a Star Trek show that they could have made before. They do have better options for it. You know, why not have he and Stamets living in a long-term relationship where they'll have ups and downs? They could even break up for a while. They're not married. But I don't want to, you know... Killing him off seems a waste of the show's sort of first serious relationship, right? Does anybody else like Burnham's got her on again, off again with Ash? Do we know of any other?
It was like on and then off, so it's not on again, off again.
That's true. I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking of the Mud episode and weird timeline stuff. And then like, and Tilly is just hooking up with whoever. But those are relationships as we see them. So. In the interest of, I think, I'm going to say, for in the interest of Trek, hopefulness and kind of I want some stable, one or two stable relationships in there, maybe.
I am okay with a stable relationship, but I don't want it enough that I
will... You don't want to sacrifice drama for it.
I don't want to tolerate a hokey resurrection.
Yeah, nobody wants a hokey resurrection.
I would rather stay dead.
If they're going to do it, I want them to do it well.
Yeah.
And they're actually, because of, you know, the reason we bring up superheroes and stuff, I think, so often is because there is a... It does relate to super science. They both, when they need to have something happen, you can come up with crazy Star Trek science, just like you can come up with crazy superhero science in a superhero comic to get what you want. And some writers have done it well, and some writers have done it terribly. I do think it's within their capacity, though, to bring him back without it being, ridiculous. So
here's another thing, is that I'm planning a possible trip to Star Trek Las Vegas in August.
Yes.
And then I was looking at the Star Trek actors that they've already confirmed are going to be there. They have, 60, I think, that are confirmed. And
good lord.
The number will probably double before August. I think they had 130 last year.
Holy crap.
But
how many of those are red shirts?
Well, the only Discovery people that are already confirmed there are Jason Isaacs.
Okay.
Lorca. Wilson.
I was going to say, you say only, but that's already a huge get.
Wilson Cruz, who plays Dr. Culber.
Yep.
And Mary Chifo, who plays Laurel. And
all,
also,
all big characters.
On the Star Trek cruise next year, next January, they have Mary Chifo and Wilson Cruz signed up for that. So I have a guess that maybe these are the only ones already signed up because they know that they're not going to be in season two. And so I'm wondering if, because I think it's very possible at this point that Lorca will die and not be on the ship anymore in season two.
Yes. He does seem to be less of a flawed protagonist and more of now a full antagonist.
Or he could be a noble person in the Mirror Universe, and that's why he went against the Emperor. I don't think that, but it's a possibility.
He seems to have that same Mirror Universe glee and and lack of empathy. I was going to say glee for violence, or at least he seemed to kind of relish what he did, busting out.
But just based on based on these scheduled appearances, I think...
You think they're gone?
Yeah, it might be safe to bet on Laurel, Dr. Culber, and Lorca all being dead and staying dead by the end of the season.
It's interesting. Vegas odds?
Yeah. Who wants to put money on it? Leave a comment or email us and let us know.
There's nothing more in the spirit of Star Trek than gambling.
I think Tom Paris gambled on Voyager. They would bet with their replicator rations and holodeck hours. And
that's true. And I'm sure Quark was big into that.
Oh, yeah. He ran a casino. So.
It's raining outside.
Yeah, it sounds like it's raining outside. Well,
Very dramatic.
What else about this episode? You did mention you had some disappointments. Did we cover all of them, or were there
more? I'm going to look at my notes here. I think part of it was I felt like a lot was happening, but I didn't always feel strongly emotionally connected to it. It's not that I was interested in watching it. I liked Stamets's final scenes with the Doctor, what seemed like the final scenes, and I liked his scenes with himself. But I did not... There was something... I felt like maybe so much was happening, so much raw plot happened in this that maybe... I don't know if it didn't unfold organically enough, or I just didn't feel, connected with it because so much happened so quickly. But something kept me a little bit at arm's length, and I can't quite pin it down.
Well, I think it was very exposition-heavy.
Right. Well, I mean, a few times there were things that I was just like, I don't know if I'm 100% sure by no threats or threat avoidance, Saru risking putting a crew member of theirs in with a Klingon captive. I didn't know if I completely bought Laurel spitting out the plan, that she wouldn't try and manipulate it in some way to her advantage, even though his cover had been blown. At some point, this is a minor thing that happened early on that set me a little bit on edge. Burnham, when they're going over to the palace ship, they mention something metaphorically about ghosts, and she says something to Lorca "Haven't you ever been afraid of ghosts?" And I'm like, "Come on, what is a Vulcan-trained person
I don't even remember that.
Yeah, she said, I'm like, why would she give a shit about ghosts? There's no, I know Vulcans have their mysticism and stuff, but they are otherwise pretty hidebound logicians. And I feel like her suddenly bringing that up seemed weird to me. Watch the episode again, make sure I'm right. But yeah, this is just a small, like, well, that was kind of an odd bit of dialogue. It didn't quite sound right. I think maybe that combined with some of the other things that didn't quite feel right, felt like they might be sometimes moving along the drama, but it didn't necessarily feel like it evolved organically from the characters. It evolved because it was where the plot points needed to land. Let's see. I was going to compliment the Emperor's ship, just that it's like, if you wanted a show of power, that's it.
Well, here's my thing, is that how are they going to make the Eagle Moss model of that? Because it had, like, that glowing energy ball in the center of it.
You could put, like, some kind of marble thing.
I think it might be one that they can't make. Because they said, like, they can't do the Narada from Star Trek 09.
Yeah.
And they can't do the sarcophagus ship from... The Klingon sarcophagus ship from this.
They're
not. Like, they can't... Like, it's too...
Why can't they make it?
Because it's too detailed, and they'd have to make it gigantic to put all the details on there.
Oh. You can... You just minimize detail when you make it smaller.
Well, then it doesn't look.
I guess you want those things to look like they were designed by the guy who designed the alien, H.R. Giger. It looks like we actually covered most of what I wanted to say here. I think the episode felt a little bit more, I'm gonna say, pulp than some of their other episodes. I mean, you know, partially just because of the violence levels, but if I. And I'm not. I don't analyze things too hard, but you know, there's a few of those things that I've just mentioned that felt a little out of place. What's her name? Georgiou killing off her entire command staff. Even though you rightly point out that this is a world of a universe of ascension and backstabbing.
Probably not the first time she's done that.
Yeah, I'm just like, that's a lot of... It seems like it would create a lot of chaos for you. You wouldn't have the stability that you want as a leader. And I assume some stability is desirable in a world of backstabbers. So those were sort of my complaints. I don't know, where did you overall end up on this episode?
I liked it a lot, but I did feel that it was a super setup for what's coming, and it kind of feels like, I don't want to say necessary evil, because I don't think it was a particularly bad episode, but I think it was a necessary slower episode just to connect the big things that had happened the previous couple of weeks, and... I guess now, like, we're moving towards the end of the season, at the end of Chapter 2.
I mean, I will
There's
say...
There's only three episodes left.
I will say, we talked about this a bit off camera, that I do appreciate that they are not hanging on these mysteries, like, oh, I wonder if they're ever going to find out that Ash is... No, okay, everybody knows. I wonder if...
They're ever going to get the Defiant computer information.
Right.
It's like, yeah, like, they got that.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if we're ever going to find out, you know, like at the end of the season, if Lorca's has any secret. Oh, we found out three episodes in. You know,
they're not doing what Lost got accused of doing, where you drag things out too long. That's probably the most infamous example. But a lot of TV shows, I feel like
X-Files and all that stuff too. And also, keep going back to superheroes. They say the CW type superhero shows. What I've watched. They sometimes do that cheesy soap opera-y thing where, like, oh, you know, like, his powers have started to malfunction. It's going to be five episodes before he tells his friends, who any smart person would tell immediately, but because they just wanted to eke some drama out of it and have him be in some dangerous situations, he doesn't tell them.
Well, they also have to make 22 episodes a season.
Right. That's their own dumb fault.
It's why I stopped watching those shows, just because I don't have the time... I would rather them make a better quality show with better storytelling that's only 15 episodes.
Totally.
And that's why I watch Star Trek Discovery instead of the CW superhero shows.
Right, yeah. I think that's a legit call. I heard the new Black Lightning show is pretty good.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll get that DC streaming service and catch up on those.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, we've pretty much covered everything we had to say on this episode.
Yep.
So,
we'll talk about next episode. what little we know. Yeah. It's another Shakespeare quote.
I don't know if we're good at making predictions, because neither one of us pay attention to the trailers, so we try to avoid information. So
yeah.
We're probably the worst people to listen to for predictions. But I will say what I'm...
Well, you're at least... You turn the episodes more over in your head to, like, kind of, like, try and posit possibilities than I do. So you've got... You've got more clues and structure of possibilities built up in your head.
Well, I'll say what I feel will happen and what I'm looking forward to seeing.
Uh-huh.
And that's going to be, now that we know the truth about Mirror Universe Lorca, and just seeing him, you know, finally initiating his plan that he's been working on the entire show up to this point.
Yeah.
And seeing when he's...
That is a long-ass term plan. Yeah. And
this is the long con.
If nothing
con.
Else, I have to, I want to give him a thumbs up for getting through to the end game.
Yeah, he literally crossed universes to get back at the Emperor.
Yeah. It was a pretty satisfying, you know, they did the, what I'm going to call the usual suspect scene, where there was a series of, you know...
Don't spoil that movie for people.
All right. What? Okay. But there's some reveals in this movie, and the way, this is honestly how they intercut a lot of reveals in movies now, where you, that, you know, you get flashbacks and lost bits of dialogue. I think they've been doing this since like the 40s or 50s. I think they've done this in movies. And they start to come together, and you realize things that you heard that didn't mean something before mean something now, and you reanalyze this stuff in a dramatic, satisfying thing. I did enjoy that moment with Lorca.
And we will see what that leads to next week in the episode What's Past is Prologue, another Shakespeare reference.
Right. This one from The Tempest, but maybe best known for kind of it's more modern usage in The Tempest. It's a couple of scallywags who crashed on Prospero's island who are now contemplating murder, and they're talking about the events that led them to it. If I'm not mistaken, that the crash that happened to them they're almost justifying it, like, well, you know, we may not have been murderers before, but that crash has put us in this position, and that's what we're doing.
Yeah, our moment in the present is the culmination of all things past.
Right.
And there is an inevitability of what is happening now, and I think that's going to be... what Lorca is going to be about in his attack against the Emperor next week.
Yeah. I would, you know what I would like to see at this point? What I want to see is I want to see the gang back together. I wonder if we can see Burnham, Tilly, Saru, Stamets. I would look forward to seeing those guys not being divided. They've been divided since they got to the Mirror Universe, essentially all running their own show or trying to keep their head above water. I'd like to see that. I don't... What is the position that Burnham is in presently? She just told Saru what they're cutting it, about the deal they're cutting with Michelle Yeoh?
No, she didn't tell him.
Who was she talking to?
She was talking to the Emperor, and then like the Emperor...
Michelle Yeoh was like standing behind her while she was talking to somebody else.
She was talking to Burnham about Lorca is actually from my universe.
No.
She's figuring it out, and then it cuts to Lorca escaping from Maddox.
At some point, who was it? Saru was talking to Burnham, and he said, "I would have preferred hearing this from
Lorca." Yeah, he did call her and say,
"Yeah, motherfucker."
Yeah, like they were talking about how like what her plan was with the Emperor,
right? And how did she put it to them? That they were going? Did she tell them?
We didn't see the beginning of the conversation.
Okay, is so that we don't...
Where you cut in at like the last possible second?
Right. Right, keeps mysteries alive and allows them more leeway to move around in the future. And one presumes she didn't say, "Oh yeah, we'll be turning over the spore drive schematics to them afterwards." That she might have put it some other way, like there's going to be a technology exchange or there's going to be something. Maybe she used some hours would seem like minutes and minutes would seem like days.
Yeah, I was about to say like it might have been like some Spock, Kirk, Rathacon code talking.
Could have been. I'm.
When you do it by the book.
Right? But I'd like to... Yeah, I'm just... They have been... I think I like the series best when the characters are in a somewhat more proactive place. And it's not that I don't want them to be down, you know, up against the ropes, which they've been for several episodes. But I think I will look forward to seeing them maybe getting a little bit of their group vibe on together and seeing what they can do with their own synergy.
So I'll just end on, now that that theory that we talked about before with Mirror Universe Lorca has been confirmed, I'm going to throw out another theory. Something that I've brought up before, and that is maybe the season will end with the Discovery coming back to the Kruk universe and traveling time. Maybe going post-Voyager. But I'm now... like,
well, what is that based on, though?
Because I don't see how they're going to be in their normal timeline.
And the spore drive doesn't become a thing.
Yeah, like the spore drive's a thing. They know about the mirror universe.
Right, like why didn't Kirk talk about spore drives? Why didn't everybody talk about spore drives?
Why was Kirk surprised when he went to the mirror universe? He'd be like, right. Oh, this is just like that report about the Terran Empire and stuff like that. So, and I think their explanation will be time travel, but they might not go post-Voyager. They might actually do some type of reset where like the entire like Klingon War doesn't happen. This is actually something that like the YouTuber Kitwowski was talking about that I kind of agree with. And I'd be a little disappointed if they did it, because I feel like nothing had any consequence if they're just going to undo the entire first season. But it could be a way of like redeeming Burnham, and she actually ends up in command of the Discovery.
Interesting.
Because at the very beginning of the show, she was about to get promoted to a captain and get her own command, it sounded like.
I do think there's other ways the Discovery could not have to reveal its technology. Like, they could get the information back to the Prime Universe that allows them to stop the Klingon War with their cloak breaker. But, you know...
they could become a Section 31 ship and just be undercover forever.
Also, Burnham and Stamets and those people, they could completely destroy all the spore drive information because it's too dangerous, because of the events that are occurring now.
That
or
seems
something
just that's... so... such a contrivance just to conveniently wrap that up.
Maybe. They could end up far away. They could end up in the Delta Quadrant or some other far, far beyond place.
That would be derivative.
They could end up out as... I mean, you know, arguably all time travel in Star Trek is derivative. But, you know, I would like to see the post-Voyager world. So I'd be for that. I don't want time resets.
I don't either.
That would probably... has the potential of making me pissed. So I don't want them to do that. I definitely don't want a sense of, like, everything we watched for is for nothing. I don't think anybody wants
but
that.
But they are going to have to explain. And these writers clearly care about canon. You know, even if some of the visuals are updated, they care about story-wise canon being intact. They're going to have to explain why no one knows about the Mirror Universe. They are eventually going to have to resolve the spore drive and explain why no one else can use that technology, but...
Maybe Gary Mitchell Stamets with glowy eyes wishes some stuff away and smooths things over with a little bit of mind, godlike mind wiping. I'm not voting for it. I'm just saying it's possible.
It's possible. But we'll find out. Just the one thing that I keep stressing with the show is be patient. There are payoffs and explanations, and I do have a lot of faith in the writers on this show.
My sense is that the fans generally are. The people who are not patient are the people who haven't gotten on board the show at all.
Yeah.
There's still a little bit of resistance to it, in spite of the fact that it's doing really well.
But
I think the people who are on board are on board.
Discovery just became the most watched digital-only show in America. It passed Stranger Things.
In your face, Stranger Things, you stink. Fucking lame show.
More people are streaming Game of Thrones, I think Walking Dead, but they're not digital only.
Right.
I like the digital only arena. Star Trek Discovery number one, Stranger Things number two.
Well, pretty impressive.
So, put that in your pipe and smoke it, you Discovery haters.
That are listening to our podcast. Yeah. Just because, despite us.
Yeah, but comment and tell me how you can't afford $6 a month.
Comment and tell us what your resolution would be for how this plays out, what the status quo becomes.
Yeah, what's your theory on how this all works together? Yeah, is it going to be time travel? Is it going to be Section 31 undercover stuff?
Is it Harry Mudd related? Could be Harry Mudd related.
But until next week, we'll sign off.
Live long and prosper, y'all.
Thank all of you so much for checking out this installment of Text Trek. I hope you enjoyed it. Please be sure to like our YouTube videos and subscribe to our channel. Audio-only versions of episodes are available at our website, www.text-trek.com. Please check out our site, especially if you just want an audio-only podcast. We have that available for you.
Y'all can also keep up with us online. You can follow us on Twitter at TXTrek, or you can check us out on Facebook at www.facebook.com/tex-trek. Please, by all means, let us know what you think by dropping a comment anywhere you see fit. We definitely want to hear your feedback. Let us know what you liked and what you would like to see more of, what you would like to see differently going forward. If you want to email me directly, go ahead. I can be reached at fatheryactual@tex-trek.com. Thank all y'all again. Take care.